Hey, Coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game.
Hey, Coach. I'm excited to announce a brand new way to access our resources to elevate your coaching monthly memberships. At Basketball Immersion, we know every coach's journey is unique, just like your player's skill sets. That's why we're dedicated to providing you with the flexibility you crave. Our new monthly access plan lets you get full access to all our videos and courses on a month-to-month basis, giving you the freedom to cancel or renew as needed. Whether you're just starting out or looking to add some fresh perspectives to your existing coaching repertoire, Basketball Immersion has the resources to help you reach your goals. Head over to basketballimmersion.com to take control of your coaching journey and unlock your full potential with Basketball Immersion.
Awesome to welcome University of Mississippi head coach Yolette McPhee-McEwen to the Basketball Podcast. Coach Yo, as everyone knows her, has elevated Ole Miss women's basketball back into the national spotlight throughout her six seasons in Oxford. McPhee-McEwen keeps building upon success each season at the helm of the Rebels, leading Ole Miss to a program record 12 SEC wins in 2023-24, as well as the school's third straight NCAA tournament appearance for its 20th overall. Along with guiding the Rebels to a program best in conference wins, Coach Yo picked up her 100th win at the helm of Ole Miss during the 2023-24 season to become the second coach in program history to achieve that feat. Coach Yo spent the five seasons before Ole Miss transforming Jacksonville into a perennial power in the Atlantic Sun Conference. She has also served as the national team head coach for her native Bahamas, as an assistant coach at Clemson, and her coaching career also includes stops at Portland, Frank Phillips College, and Arkansas Pine Bluff. Coach Yo, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on here. I'm an avid fan. I listen to all of your stuff, so I'm grateful to be on.
I'm grateful to have you on. Coach, you're one of my favorite follows. You bring so much energy, it seems, to your program through your social media, through your interactions with people. It's just wonderful. And beyond talking about that, I want you to highlight something too, because going through your social media, this Girls Empowerment Summit and the Single Moms Empowerment Summit, just awesome stuff, Coach.
Oh my gosh. I am nervous about it, but excited, a good nervousness. My foundation has an opportunity to launch for this. This is two parts of maybe eight different initiatives that we're doing this summer. And we're kicking it off, like you said, with the Girls Empowerment Summit and the Women's Empowerment Summit, Single Moms Empowerment Summit. And it's just something for me that I'm incredibly passionate about, just giving it back to our youth and also women through education and sports. So it's going to be a great time.
It reflects your whole social media, which is just very empowering, particularly around women. And I value that. And it's wonderful to be able to see. And we're here to talk about that. But we're also here to talk about basketball, Coach, because you've done a heck of a job, particularly on the defensive end, where a lot of your program has held its hat. And the defense last year, multiple program records, Ole Miss shattering a single season best of 190 blocks, holding 11 opponents under 50 points to set a school record in a single season. And you say your philosophy is, we don't change our philosophy, which is to dictate and disrupt.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much, that's simple. Like we just don't change it. I think I got that from Carl Semesco. Like I remember playing at the mid-major level. And he would just play man. Like he would play man. There was no element of surprise. You knew what you were going to get from him, but you still had to stop him on the offensive end. And that was my first introduction to being who you are and being comfortable with it. And then once I started adopting this defensive system, I learned that we're going to just be who we are. It's not enough hours in the day. It's not like back in the day when you could just practice for however long. We have a required amount of hours per week, 20, and a stretch, film, all of those count in that. So for me, we have to be good at something. We don't want to be just good at a bunch of things and a master of nothing. We want to be a master of something. And our man-to-man defense is just something that I'm willing to stick with as long as I coach.
I love the philosophy in this sense that, especially you mentioned, obviously, the practiced hours, but also the transitions of rosters.
Yeah.
Doesn't this, in a sense, make it so simple for players? They get there, your current players understand it, and new players can pick it up. Because again, you said, we're just going to master this.
Listen, we're now JUCO coaches, right? Like with the philosophy of every 2 years, you may have a brand new roster and there's no excuse. This is just what it is and the times we're in. And yes, so I think an advantage for us is having a defensive system. That way people know what to expect when they come and we recruit towards it. I know a lot of people see our team and they're like, yeah, they're uber athletic and we are, but I would take a non-athletic kid that has a competitive mindset because at the core of it, that's what it's about. Are you willing to compete?
Love it. And diving deeper for us, can you highlight the dictate part of it? What do you mean by dictate?
Yeah, anytime you get to play an opponent, I think that the team that enforces their identity the most wins most times, whatever that is. You look at Alabama men, three-point shooting at the rim, no mid-range. Utah women, same thing. For us, it's going to always stand on our defense. Now, we did average, I think in conference, 71 points, but still defensively is what we hung our hat on. And so when we talk about dictate, we look at each opponent we're getting ready to play. And when we're preparing and we're working on scouts, what we're saying is, how can we dictate what they're going to do offensively? If they want to be a motion team, which means they're a passing team, then we spend a lot of time on not allowing them to pass and utilize something that they're not used to utilizing, which is the dribble. If they're a dribble drive team, then we want to make them be a passing team. So dictate means whatever, however our opponents feel the most comfortable, making them have to think about doing something different.
And of course, going hand in hand with that is disrupt. And a lot of what you talked about leads to disruption. So talk about that and the value of it. And then give us a little bit more specific context, if you could.
Yeah, again, dictate and disrupt is, hey, we're going to dictate how you're going to play. If you want to play a slow pace, we're going to make you play fast because we pick up 94 feet. Occasionally we press. But what's funny, dictate and disrupt is exactly what it is. When we were in the Bahamas in a three-game tournament, we played a 2-3 zone against Arizona. And we never play zone. We don't work on it. It's just not something we do. And I remember Adia at the end of the game saying, I can't believe you pulled out a zone on us. But for us, in that moment, that was the way we were going to dictate and disrupt what they were trying to do. It was the part of the season. They weren't shooting the ball well from the perimeter. They're not staunch rebounders. Let's throw in this 2-3 zone the night before and see what happens. So I'm not married to our man-to-man defense. That is on at the core what we do. But whatever it takes for us to disrupt our opponent, I'm open to.
That pretty much highlights the next question, which is that you are adaptable within your dictate and disrupt. And that gave us an example. But when you say we don't change our philosophy, you don't change your philosophy relative to those goals of dictating and disrupting, but you will change the way that you do that.
Yeah, we don't press a lot, but we have occasions where I think probably during the season, we may have pressed 50, 60 times. We work on it, not a lot. We spend the majority of our time in man-to-man. Every once in a while, I'll have us work on a zone, but it's our man principles, more or less. And I think there's nothing sadder than a woman or man that doesn't know who they are. It's like a leaf in the wind. And we know who we are. We're going to pick up, we're going to dictate, and we're going to disrupt. But when I say we don't change our philosophy, it doesn't matter who we play. There are systematic things that we do defensively that will never change. And it's just our secret sauce that we work on no matter what. It doesn't matter if we're playing zone. It doesn't matter if we're pressing. It doesn't matter if we're in man half court or full court. Systematically, there are things that we teach that we just won't change.
Love that. And you mentioned picking up 94 feet. Not pressing, you mean in terms of not trapping.
Pressure. Right.
But you're going to pick up the ball. So the ball never comes over a half.
No, I mean, there was a time in our season, I remember we had ended up beating Tennessee 85-80. And I was just sick to my stomach. I'm like, y'all, this is just not who we are. I know we're on fire. We went through a little string of just really scoring a lot offensively, but that's merely because of our defense. Our defense dictates our offense. But our team started to fall in love with the offensive side on the ball. And I just remember saying to them, y'all, this is fool's gold, because there will be a moment where we don't make a shot. It's just not going in, and we're going to need our defense. But there was a string where our team started to play in the half court defensively, not pick up. And I'm like, we're having an identity crisis, because this is not who we are. Yes, we're winning games. Yes, it's working. But at the core, it's not who we are. And we showed up against Texas A&M, and it was like a wonky game because our starter ended up getting ejected because of a double technical. It was like a crazy game, but we did not have our defense to its core, and it couldn't pull us through. And right then and there, after that game, I brought everybody in and I said, I'm just telling y'all right now, I will lose every other game that we have before I sell out and not let us stay true to what we do. We defend. We rebound, we run, we share the ball. This is who we are. This is what we have to do. And they all bought in, and we ended up winning 7 games in a row after that.
That's a good change in terms of that. And obviously had a great season. And you mentioned secret sauce. So I've got to ask, Coach, what are some of the things in the secret sauce that you can share with us?
For us, us against the ball. We never put pressure on. We don't put pressure on one person to get a stop. There's a sense of pride that each player has to get a stop defensively, but our philosophy is our stop, not your stop, it's ours. So us against the ball, because here's the thing, you can make someone fall into taking a tough two, and we give up the offensive rebound, and it negates all that work that one person put in. And so we put onus on the whole team. Our philosophy is no threes, no layups, tough twos only. So we feel good if we can just make you take a contested two. We put a lot of pressure on our teams to take away three-point shots from people. So anytime you see a team score a lot of threes on us, that's uncharacteristic. Take Missouri, elite level three-point shooting team. In order for us to beat them, we felfelt like they averaged, I think, 9 makes. We felt like we had to cut that in half, or it maybe even more. Our team took on the challenge, and they didn't make 1 3. Okay, let's go Gonzaga last year, Stanford last year. Gonzaga was known as the top 3-point shooting percentage team in the country. We made more than them that game. And so for us, we spend a lot of emphasis on taking away the 3 ball, and we rather send you at the rim and go 2 for 2 every single day.
I love it. You're going to pique a lot of coaches' interest when you talk about taking away the 3-point shot, which is just a big part of the game. Can you talk about some of the specific kind of technique-based things that individual players do to take people out of their 3-point shot or out of their 3-point rhythm?
Yeah, we try to not be put in scram situations a lot. We try to take pride in guarding our yard, guarding the first 3 dribbles. We feel like if you could guard the first 2 to 3 dribbles, that you could keep someone in front of you. And there's a way we work on it. We have defensive vitamins we work on every single day just to keep everybody sharp as far as from a defensive standpoint. We have techniques like our sprint techniques. There are a lot of things that we do to disrupt the pass that would make someone comfortably get into a shot. And our saying is, 3's on you, 2's are on us. So we don't care if we have our 6'4 big out there. They got to take away that 3. Like, that 3 is on you. Now the 2 is on us, because we have built-in help. And the way that we help, we don't help off the ball side. That's how we're going to send you to the rim, and we'll go 2 for 2 all day.
I love it. And phrasing is excellent. And then obviously your players must have great confidence in knowing that based on that, that if they take away the 3, they've done their job to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So that empowers them to do that, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. It definitely does, because it's now you're not thinking it's just on you. You got to get out and you got to take away that three. We ran into a Notre Dame team this year that we were able to take away the three, but it was the most efficient team we ran into from the two. And that was a challenge for us. But usually the way our defense is set, it's a true challenge for us against five out motion teams, because they're going to spread you out and we don't want to give up the three. But at the same time, we don't want you to make an easy layup either. And so that has been an extreme challenge. And again, I like to just give a shout out to my mid-major roots, because those coaches have challenged me to be better every single time.
Absolutely. And you mentioned this concept of understanding basically what gets you beat. And for me, I connect it to, for an individual player, they understand what gets them subbed. Clarity, it's role clarity, yeah. In terms of that. Give up the three, yeah, I mean, versus give up the two.
Yeah, they know. If they hear a buzzer, they know why they're coming out. And listen, I'm incredibly disciplined on the defensive end, but offensively, I let them loose. We play advantage basketball. We try to figure out ways for our players to get to their kill spots and be able to be confident and score. So they know if they just can defend at the highest level, then offensively they have the freedom. With, let's just face it, most players gain their confidence from the offensive.
Absolutely. And I want to go a little deeper with the offensive stuff, because I love you connecting those two things. But first, I want to come back to something that I read in an article, and I'm fascinated by this phrasing, clean versus physical. Mm-hmm. You've spoken about the importance of playing clean, physical defense.
Yeah.
So can you explain that distinction between clean and overly physical play?
Yeah. Here's the thing. Just because we're in your face, all right, we shrink the floor. So there's a mirage that we build. When you play us, you don't think it's one-on-one. You just feel like we're everywhere. And that's by how we recruit, the size that we have on the perimeter. If you're going to be small, then you have to be feisty and intense and just really make people uncomfortable in their space. And so that's, to the core, that's what we do. But defensively for us, we focus primarily on how can we take away what you want to do. And then because of it, we are anxious to get the ball and then go score on the offensive end. And my players just absolutely love that, love the freedom. I tell you this too, Chris, what allows us to work on player development at a high level on the offensive end is because we don't do a lot of different things. They know in practice, shell defense, man-to-man defense, full court pressure. We're going to work on those things, and then we're going to be able to have fun on the offensive end, which gives more time for them to work on their offensive game.
Absolutely. And you mentioned shrink the floor. That's a term that I used recently in my podcast to share with coaches. Just a simple idea to understand to take away space is your goal. Yeah. Is that how you connect it?
Yes, take away space. And I did want to say this too, because I got sidetracked. I got 48 tabs open up in my mind right now, because the portal.
I imagine that's exactly who you are, coach.
I have 48 tabs. But I want to go back to this whole clean thing because of why I brought it up. I'm usually embarrassed if we put our teams that we play against in the bonus in any quarter. Most times, if we don't put them in the bonus, it's because we're playing good defense. So clean defense means, okay, yeah, we're athletic, but we don't have to jump for everything. Yeah, we block shots, but most times not on the ball, off the ball, where we do such a good job. We speed you up and now our help side's coming and they're going to meet you at the rim because we're athletic. We practice Seminoling. We call it Seminoling, where you go two hands on the ball on a drive, because we got that from Florida State men. So we, instead of swiping where the official may call a foul, we practice two hand holds. That is something that we talk about, but it's so unique because, if you're a really good post player, we take pride in hitting first. So before you get to your kill spot, which is probably in the paint, we hit you in transition. We don't even let you comfortably get there. If you're going to go set a ball screen, we don't even let you just run up there free and set a ball screen. We want to hit first. That's the dictate and disrupt. How someone will go up in their path and set a ball screen. We rather make you have to go this way outside. Now that messes up your timing. Now you're a second late to go setting that screen. That's the physicality play, which is all legal. When we play teams that are not used to that, their easy out is, oh, we play this dirty style of basketball. And we have to normalize the word physicality in women's basketball. All of the greats play physical. Soccer, they play physical. You get what I'm saying? So for me, it's let's go ahead and embrace the physical part of the game as long as it's within the rules.
I love your approach in that way, because again, to me, my interpretation of what you're saying is that you are proactively physical.
Yes.
And because you're fouling a lot, you get away with a lot. Right. Even though your intent is not to foul, it's normalized the physicality of the game, which is a part of the game.
It's just a physical play. I don't even know if it's fouling. It's all legal. You look at Texas, Vic Schaefer, he plays a physical style. We're not jumping over people's backs. We're not pushing them out the air. We're not making dirty plays. No, we're in your face. When you go to shoot, we're contesting every shot. You're not open. When you think you're open because you beat our first defender, our second line of defense is there. We take charges. We show our hands. These are the things that we take pride of. And it's legal within the rules. And when it's not, we're punished. So one of our goals that we have every game is no bonus any quarter. And then we lead the country in getting fouled the most. We're one of the top teams because we play downhill. We attack. We're aggressive. And so that is something that we take pride in.
I love it. It speaks, a lot of the stuff that you've said so far speaks to basketball being the game of opposites in the sense that you want to get to your kill spot on offense and prevent them from getting to theirs. We want to play physical on defense because it helps us understand how to play physical on offense.
Yeah.
And that comes back to usually, again, first contact wins generally, doesn't it?
In anything, in dodgeball, in any sport, any contact sport, the first contact or the lowest man always wins. And so we just take pride in that. And that's why I don't want a narrative that we're out here playing bully basketball. That's not what we're doing. I'm a stickler on if you want to play, you're going to defend. So people get in the game, they play incredibly hard. And that's what we take pride in.
I'm glad you brought up the ball screen example, the path to the ball screen, because I watched some of your defensive clips and it stimulated me to remember. That's one thing that I noticed is that cutters don't cut on a straight path in your games.
No, even our out of bounds defense, we play that 1-3-1 slanted zone. And one of the philosophies is no one should go through our grid untouched. But we don't do it with our hands. We do it with our butts. And so that's legal. And even when we play defensively, sometimes officials let offensive teams get away with a butt screen against us. And that's not legal, right? But they do it so often, sometimes they miss it. They don't call it. But I bring it to their attention. Like, that's not legal. She can't, because we're fighting over the screen and they don't like it. They can't stick their butt out and try to disrupt our flow, because that's our legal ground. And you got to play on the officials too, because they're human and it's a lot, but we are touch first. Where we have, if you come to our practice, you'll see at least, and this is true, 3 to 75 positive touches throughout the practice. So we're always touching, we're hitting first, and we take pride in it. My players wear their knee pads, they know. They come to practice, you're going to dive, you're going to swim, you're going to be hit.
Love it. And you mentioned the psychology of the official. The official does not want to call a foul. That's the psychology of them. So yeah, you're likely to get away with more if you're just aggressive all the time.
Yeah, it's just hard. Or you'll be playing 4-hour games, and who wants that?
Nobody wants that.
So unless it's blatant, I think they try to just let people play. And each conference has their style of play. But here's what people can't take away from us. The last three national championship teams came from the Southeastern Conference. Last year, we had four teams in the Sweet 16. This year, I think we ended up with two. And then we had our national champions. This is the Premier League. We don't want to hear what anybody has to say about anything else. Our league is the most comparable to WNBA. Let's look at the draft picks. Who had the most? Let's do the numbers. Let's not get emotional. Let's look at the numbers. Our style is the most comparable to the WNBA.
I started by saying you're a great ambassador for the game. You're a great ambassador for your program, great ambassador for your league. I just love the way that you show up for so many different things. And coach, we talked about the ball screen. Let's go quickly back to that. So disrupt their path. And then what is the preferred defensive disruption at the point of the screen? So they finally get to the screen.
Yeah.
How are you defending there?
We prefer to fight over the screen, no matter what, even if it's against a non-shooter. We want to always make contact as much as possible. Now, for the defender that is defending the person that's setting the screen, it all depends. Sometimes we go drop coverage. Most times we'll just switch out 1 through 5. That's why our defense is disruptive too, because we have players that can guard multiple positions. And so we'll switch 1 through 5, and our 5 player will get up and disrupt the passer as well, or the handler as well. And you know what? You think, okay, what about the mix match? As long as we don't let them get a 3, it's no mix match. So if they're going to take our 6'4" kid out, send them to the rim. And then we rely on our help side defense.
What are you doing to take away inside scoring? Because obviously your league especially is known for having great inside scoring.
Sometimes we front the post, and then and most times we 3-quarter front, just take away their vision, take away their space, hit first. We have elite level 5 players in our conference, and we've had to do a lot of work on figuring out how to stop them from even getting the ball. Because once they get the ball, they're either going to get fouled or they're going to get 2 points. So again, we prefer to front the post. Okay. We prefer to front the post and then rely on our help side on the backside.
Fronting the post, is it chest to chest or butt to chest in terms of the front?
No, sometimes it's butt to chest mostly. Because we want to take out the knees and just play as low as we can to try to legally displace them. But if we can't, worst case, we just want a 3-quarter front and take away their space so that we can deter them, the passer, from even thinking that they can get the pass in. But our secret sauce to post defense is the person guarding the ball. So if there's a ball that gets clean inside, you'll hear our players, or when we watch film, they'll say, that was on me. I didn't do enough to take away the vision for the passer. Same on a backdoor cut. We put onus on the person guarding the ball because you can't score without the ball. So that's our first point of emphasis, making sure that we're focused on the person guarding the ball.
Lob goes in, the weak side rotates over. Are you doubling the ball until it's kicked out in terms of the lob?
Really. It just depends on the matchup. Again, see that, and that's what I'm saying. There are tweaks to our defense. Sometimes we don't trap off of ball screens. If there's someone really good and they're lethal, I'll do it. I'm not going to say, no, this is what we do. No, if disrupting them, if it's getting it out of their hands, then that's what I'm going
to
do.
It strikes me, I've said it many times on the podcast, structure to freedom. It strikes me that you're giving them great structure to start with, and then that allows you and them to be adaptable.
Yes, yes. And so let me give you a funny story. Again, back to the Bahamas tournament, 3-game tournament. We're getting ready to play Michigan. So I go in, I said, guys, we've been watching film. I just don't think we should pressure them as much. This is our 3rd game. How about we sit back, take away this, take away that, And the whole room got quiet. And I say, y'all don't want to do that, huh? And they just all just exploded. No, coach, that's just not who we are. I'm telling you, you get more buy-in by just knowing who you are and sticking to it. And I know that there are coaches that go scout specific and that works for them, but maybe that's who they are. But I can't set the precedent and say, we're going to pressure. And then as soon as we get in this situation, now I'm instilling fear in my players and doubt in my players. And so, you know what? I said, you know what? You guys are right. That's on me. Let's go. Let's guard them. We're going to pick them up 94 feet. We're going to take away their vision. We're going to disrupt them. And we ended up becoming champs that game. And I'm glad that the players felt comfortable enough to say, no, let's just stick to what we do and who we are.
And they obviously who they are.
Yeah.
They love that identity. And that's something that you fostered in that.
Yeah, for sure. But human nature is a beast. And sometimes coaches, we become too smart and we want to do things our way. And sometimes we can get in the way of allowing things to just be what they are. And that's what I admire from a lot of the greats. You never see them really overcoach, but sometimes we can get in a place where we overcoach, Chris, because there's so much information out there. And so you're like a library and you want to, oh man, I watched this and I saw this and I saw this team do this. But for us, we're going to stick to what we do and hopefully see the benefits of it because we believe in it.
One of my favorite rants in support of coaches against people that haven't coached is this concept of the adjustment. Oh, they didn't make any adjustments. And it's like some magical thing. And you just spoke about that so well because we're hearing this all through the NBA playoffs. Oh, they're not adjusting. Well, what are you talking about? Right. They're not adjusting. They're just literally sitting back and letting them beat. No, of course, they're doing things or they're telling their players to do it better.
And most times, y'all, that coaching in depth is in practice. When you get to the game, you're managing the game. Now, are there adjustments that should be made? Yeah, we made adjustments. Again, we were playing Arizona. They were kicking our butt, man. I didn't have enough timeouts to try to fix it. We tried a zone. It worked. We stuck with it. We got out of there, right? Or we lost our starting point guard, and it was a big blow for us. And I started playing my four player at the point. That's adjustment. Or in the game, understanding that they're going to start fouling and getting your low percentage people out of there. But those are the things, the adjustments, I think. If you're going to critique a coach, critique it for those things. Someone's killing you off a ball screen, maybe looking at a different coverage. But most times, players decide what's getting ready to happen. And you better hope that you can rely on your training. That's what they do in the military. They rely on their training. So whatever you're doing in practice will show come game time.
Love it. I love it. Thanks for bringing clarity to that. And we've got to talk a little bit about the offense then, coach, because I love this. And a lot of coaches say it. Okay, I coach them so hard on defense and then I give them freedom on offense.
Yeah.
But it's not just simply that. You don't just give them freedom. You give them a structure from which freedom comes. So talk to us a little bit about what are some of the concepts that you emphasize to be able to give them freedom on offense?
A couple of things we do is one of the things that we're big on is player development. So we do player development year round. And to a common basketball hoop fan, they're like, everyone does that. But again, people forget we have 20 hours, 4 hours a day. And you're like, well, that's plenty of time. No, it's not. You got weight, you got film, you got practice. And so we have to squeeze in player development time within that. And then are you really going 4 hours a day? You're not. So really, you're going 2.5 hours a day of basketball. And so we focus on player development year round. That's important to us. And then offensively, we want to play advantage basketball. I'm not a stickler to the numbers that the 2-point shot is an awful shot. Would I like to shoot the three better? Yes. That is something that we've tried to get going in the portal in our recruiting. And I'm constantly thinking about how we can make anywhere from 2 to 3 more threes a game. All right. But our players are aware due to analytics where their kill spots are. So we feed them a lot of analytics. Hey, this is where you score at a high premium. This is where you score at a low premium. We work on fixing the low shots, low percentage shots, but we focus on making sure they're comfortable with the high percentage shots. And then our offense is based on that. So if the advantage is us pushing in transition and getting to the rim, we're going to do that. If the advantage is us getting the offensive rebound and putting it back because we're bigger and taller, we're going to focus on that. If the advantage is, okay, they're going to pack it in on us. We're not shooting the three ball. We know we got a rebound. But our mid-range jumper has been good to us. And Mike Nabors said it best when he played us. He said, I know everyone talks about Ole Miss defense, but their offense isn't too shabby either. He was like, they go from 15 feet to 12 feet, and then next thing you know, they're at 8 feet. And so we try to give our players confidence to take that high percentage shot, whatever that is. And because here's the thing, Chris, you can look at statistics and say, this team shoots 23%, but let's peel it back more. I got three players on my team to shoot 30-something percent. They're the ones that should be shooting, not the other ones. There's a kid that could go 1-for-6 and completely kill your team percentage. So we try to focus on advantage basketball. Who is hitting the three from a high percentage? Let's make sure you have the green light to do. You on the other hand, 30% or below, you don't have the green light. So where are your green light shots are, and we focus on that. Okay. And then I think the best offensive teams score in the first 10 seconds, first 8 seconds of the game, because defenses are just way too good nowadays.
Advantage basketball, play fast in terms of those possibilities there. So talk to us, how do you develop that in practice? How are you specifically helping them understand the advantage that they have?
Yeah. Again, we first start with statistical data. So in the summer, my analytics guys they have like statistics from practice. We don't wait for a box score during the game. They know their box scores in the course of training camp. We call preseason practice training camp. So they learn their numbers then. So they're not even surprised when they get in the game what they're shooting. And we show it to them. They all have their own statistical booklets, and they get to see the team's overall one too. And then as far as practice is concerned, our practice is incredibly fast-paced with a lot of our offense-based stuff. We do a lot of O-D-O. We do a lot of those as well, so that they get comfortable in how we're going to play in the normal game.
Love it. And so fast-paced practice, obviously, in terms of that, a physical practice as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Talk to us about monitoring workload management and all the different things that go with it nowadays, because obviously keeping your team fresh in your league is also important. And that's an art, that whole balance, isn't it?
Yeah. And really, you have to evolve because you have to be willing to listen to your players and watch them and have an intuition about them. And so our sports performance team and I, we talk daily on that. And I am very conscious of, you know what, this needs to be a 45-minute practice today. Because here's the thing, when we practice, we're going to go hard. And so it's not so much about how many reps you get. It's about being efficient in the reps that you do get. So once we, in preseason training camp, we'll go anywhere from 2 hours, 2:15. Once we start playing, it'll drop to about 2 hours, an hour 45. When we get to conference play, we're at like an hour and 30 minutes, hour 45 minutes. Postseason, hour 30 minutes. So just managing their bodies. I always go above the off days that we usually give them, just because if they're going to go hard, I'll give them an extra day of rest. I believe in the philosophy of when you don't make them be in the gym as much, then they'll start to create that and miss it. Okay, postseason, we're allowed to have 4 hours, 8 hours before on the basketball court. I use none of those hours after postseason because I believe in a break as well. And our sport is the only sport that goes through and track two whole seasons. You look at volleyball, one semester. You look at baseball, one semester. Soccer, one semester. But with basketball, we're a two-semester sport. They need a break. Ever since I told them, look, I'm not messing with you all. If you want to go in the gym, you can go in the gym at your leisure. Just get with a coach. We hadn't had a day when people hadn't been in the gym. And I promise you, it's because I'm not making them be in the gym. And so there's a psychological aspect to this, because in their mind, they're saying, coach gets us. Coach understands it. And most times too, I think about how I feel. Now I'm 42, so I'm not a young spring chicken like they are. But if I'm tired, I always assume that they're tired. And I base it off of that as well.
Coach, from your personality, I got to think you never get tired.
You'd be surprised.
I know you do. We all do. We all have a limited amount of
especially
energy.
Especially with two young girls.
I know. You're full on all the time. It's great. Yeah. Talk to us about the kill spots then. How do you define a kill spot for someone? How do they get to understand their kill spot, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, that's when we rely heavy on film and analytics. So for Marquisha Davis, she just went 11 in the draft. Her mid-range was at a 1.2 PPP. I'm not going to tell her not to take the mid-range shot. Her three-point, not so much. And we needed that to be improved, and we tried to work on it. But so our offense is ball screen advantage offense. We just allowed her to have freedom to reject the ball screen, get to her kill spot. Come off the ball screen, get to her kill spot. Making sure that the players on the team knows where each other's kill spots are. So when they're playing fast and in transition, they know, okay, I'm driving to the paint. Let me get a paint touch, kick it out to this person who's a shooter. That person catches it. Oh, I'm not a shooter. Let me one more. We rely heavy on the analytics and the number charts to show our players where their hot and cold spots are.
Analytics, sure, but also it's very conceptual in a way.
Yeah.
So getting your players to conceptually understand that on the floor, the analytics certainly help support it, but take us a little further in terms of understanding it on the floor. You stopping it if they don't get to their kill stop?
I said, that's not your shot.
Yeah.
That's not your shot. That's her shot. So you take your shot and she'll take her shot. And then together we'll all bring it together. But from an analytics standpoint, they're new age, there's a court and they show you where your hot and cold zones are. And so now that you and your position coach has it, when you all are in the gym, y'all are working on those things. And so that is why they accept it, because it's not like just hitting them with a number. Hey, when you shoot the mid-range, that's not good enough. A lot of people are visual learners. It wouldn't be good for me. So we make sure they see it. We get them on the floor. They understand where those places are. And then they get to see their work from it after every practice, after every game.
That's awesome. Thank you for going deeper with that. And coach, I got to ask, because to play this style of defense, to do some of the things you're talking about, there's obviously got to be great accountability within your program. So talk to us about how you foster that accountability.
Yeah, I learned this from, I forget the coach's name, and I think they retired, but it was one of the greatest college soccer coaches at North Carolina.
Anson Dorrance.
Yes. And his philosophy was, he wanted to get his players to the truth as quickly as possible, because he felt like if he could get his young women to the truth, then the beauty happens. And so that's one of the things I focus on with our team. I try to get them to the truth of their truth. Okay. I know someone told you you're good at this, but you're not really good at this. You're good at this. So while that hurts your feelings, let's get what you're good at. You're good at this. Let's go ahead and figure this out. Let's be great at this. And I tell them all the time, y'all, I'm good at this. If I try to be good at what this coach is over here, is if I try to do that and master that, then I lose who I am. And so we have what's called the Ole Miss Way. So we have 12 standards that we have. And one of them is accountability. Like you have, if you mess up, fess up. We're all grown. You're not going to get a spanking. No one's perfect. We try to normalize that in our program. There's no perfect. But social media with our youth drives them to want to be perfect. When they put a pitch out, it's that perfect pitch. Why? Because they were able to use a filter or take a million poses. We all do it, right? But that's not really reality. And it's beauty in imperfection. And so we encourage making mistakes in practice. We encourage people saying, that was on me. It could be as simple as someone made a mistake. I put them on the line. They run for it. And our team is cheering them on to the point where I'm like, why are you cheering a bad habit on? Instead of cheering them on to show them you have their back, simply say to them, you got to be better with that. And then embrace them. The power of words and the usage of words is important. So accountability is first by knowing oneself and accepting oneself. And not looking at it in a negative way, but in a beautiful way, because that is who you are.
Coach, you just laid that out beautifully. That was absolutely amazing. And I got to say, I'm curious your thoughts on what makes a great coach, particularly because you mentioned social media around your players. And I know I'm part of the problem, that I'll put out a play from a coach and it'll give the impression to everyone that coach is a great coach because those are great X's and O's. Right. I put out the X's and O's because that's what gets the most social media views.
That's right.
That type of thing. But talk to me a little bit about what is a great coach in your mind?
Yeah, and it's a big discussion out there about X's and O coaches. And there's a lot of ways that we can look at that, right? Who is a good X and O coach out there? But I think the best coaches evolve with the times while keeping the standard the way it is. So finding a way to meet them halfway and evolve, but the standards being what it is, I think the best coaches are the ones that can get the most out of their players, because you could have a bunch of talent and then they don't perform. The ones that can help tap into them mentally. And I think the best coaches out there are the ones that leave the biggest impact on the players when they leave. There are tons of great, how do I put this, basketball coaches. It's not hard to be a good X and O guy or gal in 2024. They can get on your stuff. We can go on YouTube. We can pull tons of great basketball content. But if you can't implement it, if you can't get your players to buy into it, how good are you when you don't have the talent that everybody else has? We've had, I think this is our third or fourth season, 20-win season, and every year we've made history here. And not a lot of times I hear, yo is a great basketball coach. I hear, yo is a great social media presence. Yo is a great defensive coach. But we're winning games. So I'm doing something right.
You're winning games at a place where traditionally you don't have this level of consistent success.
Exactly.
Right? You might have the one off. Yeah. And I couldn't agree with you more that you are an outstanding coach. And
right. So that's the fight that let's really look at this. Just because someone runs a fancy offense, I think we have to be careful with how we talk about that. Man, this coach runs an elite level or a complex style on offense, because sometimes it doesn't take complexity to win a national championship. Sometimes it just takes putting people in places for them to be successful. So I think when we talk about X's and O's, we got to just stop talking about who runs a complex motion style offense, bunch on one side, single screen on one side. Let's talk about who is running an offense that's applicable to the personnel they have and that it's turning out to be successful. To me, those are the great X's and O coaches.
And speaking to that, it's people that are have built a program.
Yes.
And have sustained a program.
Yeah.
And it's not, again, like there's always outliers either way, but it is very rare to be able to maintain a program, especially in your conference.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I take pride in that too. I remember when we went to the NIT championship, I said, the next level for us is NCAA. And then we go, I'm like, the next level, we got to win one first round game. And then we go to the Sweet 16. For me, I take pride in consistency. When I look at Tara Vandeveer, Gina Auriemma, what Vivian Stringer did in her time, what Dawn Staley is doing. Okay, let's go on the men's side. Let's go NBA. Let's go music. The best of the best have sustainability. And so that is something that I want to continue to do, be able to sustain a level of high success.
You've done it at two programs now.
Right.
So you're well on your way, coach.
And let me tell you something. The SEC is not making it easier with Texas and Oklahoma coming in here. So,
well, and not to get into the politics of it all and the decision making, but look, you can be really successful in the SEC, we saw this year, and get fired.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, because that, Kelly, what she did was pretty impressive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, was pretty impressive.
And a lot of people that came before her weren't able to get it back to the level that she got it.
Yeah, yeah. And luckily for me, even at Ole Miss, the Van Chancellors, Carol Ross, they had a lot of success. And what I appreciate being here, I hear from them at least 5 to 6 times a year, just pouring into me, sometimes just giving me confidence to keep going. And I would like to make this, I would like to do what Tara has done at Stanford, what Gino has done at UConn, what Don is doing at South Carolina. I would like to do that here at Ole Miss.
And it strikes me too, from knowing you and knowing some people that know you a little bit, that you do value your role now as a mentor to yes. other coaches, and particularly to younger coaches. And you spoke yes. at the WBCA conference, different things yeah. like that, that you want to give back and you want to support.
Yeah, for me, my mission is to teach, develop, and inspire. And at the surface, initially, I thought I just meant from a basketball perspective. But since being in the business now, 20 years, going on my 12th season as a head coach, I've learned that means anybody that I come into contact with, not just my players, but also other colleagues in the business. And yeah, I take pride in being an avid learner. So I'm always learning. I'm always like, one of my goals this summer is to try to improve my emotional intelligence. And so just reading a lot of books, because we're in games, very hectic and chaotic situations, being able to maintain my cool in those moments so that I can think clearly. I'm always trying to learn and study from the best, who I consider the best. And then when I do have the knowledge, I take pride in helping and giving it to other people and not just holding it in to myself, for myself.
I love that. I love that humility that you approach coaching with and everything that you do in coaching. And coach, I got to say, you were at the top of my list for a very long time.
Oh my God. Thank you so much.
And I appreciate you because I know how hard it is sometimes to give up an hour of your day for things like this. And I know you always wanted to do it.
Yeah, because I follow your stuff. So I respect what you do and I bookmark a lot of it and take a lot of stuff. Like I've gotten some ATOs from your page, man. So you keep up the good work. That's your ministry too, giving back and giving a voice for coaches. And I really wanted to make it work. And I appreciate you being consistent with me with that.
I guess my point is that's how much I valued you as a coach is that I just Thank really you. Wanted you to be on this podcast to share with everyone beyond, again, somewhat just what we see on social media. Because when I heard people talk about your WBCA conference like on defense and everything else behind it, I knew, oh, my God, this is going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Give them all the goods. But anytime anybody is welcome to come to practice, you too, just come. And I never close my practices. I let everybody in so that they can come and see what it's like. Because some of the things I can't even explain, you would have to come and witness it yourself.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, Coach, for sharing with us.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show and to give the Basketball Podcast and this week's guest a shout out on social media. to show your support for us sharing the game. And to stay up to date on all things Basketball Immersion, subscribe to our newsletter at basketballimmersion.com/newsletter.